Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues. That's the name of this program, Today's Issues, on the American Family Radio Network. This is Thursday, June the 29th, 2023. Thanks for joining us here on AFR. Joining me in studio is newsman Christopher Woodward.
Good morning,
Chris. Good morning to you, Chris. And in North Carolina is Dr. Alex McFarland. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, everybody. It's good to be with you.
Okay, so let's see. Ray Pritchard, Brother Ray's out. He's traveling the country somewhere, preaching the Bible. And then let's see. Ed's at the casino.
I knew it.
And no, I don't know. I can either confirm or deny. I know Ed's out today, and then Fred Jackson's stuck in an airport, Alex, between here and Canada.
Oh, my goodness. I know what that's like.
No, Fred, I think most summers he goes home for 10 days or so to visit his family in Nova Scotia. And then I think his flight, is that right, Brent? His Fred's flight was delayed or canceled or something?
It was delayed. He's having trouble getting back.
Do you know what airport he's in right now?
I don't. Chris may know.
Yes. He is back in these United States of America.
Okay.
But he's currently living his best life as like John Candy and others in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles trying to make it back to Tupelo.
You see, so when is Fred expected back?
He hopes to be back, Lord willing, tomorrow evening. The plan was for him to be back actually in studio today, but due to travel hiccups, that's been in turmoil for about the past 24 or 48 hours. He made it back to as far as Philly, but he's trying to make it from Philly to here at some point in the next 24 hours or so.
Gotcha. Well, we're going to talk about some major breaking news in just a moment out of the United States Supreme Court. First of all, Alex, I know you fly in and out of Charlotte. That's your main airport, right?
Yeah, I was just in the Charlotte airport 2 hours ago, and as we were coming in to land, I could see smoke across the horizon. All that smoke from those wildfires they're talking about, it's made its way down to the mid-Atlantic region. So,
The Canadian wildfire smoke. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was just this...
In North Carolina. Wow.
Palpable haze over the landscape. I've flown into Charlotte 1,000 times, probably, no kidding. And all that smoke is down here, and you can smell it in the air too.
Well, and that's permeating Chicago and Illinois and Indiana. I mean, other parts of the country as well, New York City and Washington D.C. I mean, it's a real problem, and I don't know how long it'll last. But let me ask you this: there was a story yesterday about a Delta Airlines flight in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Having to make an emergency landing on their what was that about? Do you know?
Well, the front landing gear, I don't know if it bent up under it or if it didn't deploy, but yeah, that thing landed. Now, thank the Lord, there were no injuries really, and there were a number of people that put video online, but that thing landed nose first onto the ground, and
on the ground or on the runway.
Well, I mean, yeah, on the
runway.
The asphalt,
okay.
On the runway, yeah. But
was this a situation where the landing gear collapsed upon impact, or would it not deploy, and they had to bring out the fire engines and all the stuff they do to prepare for an emergency landing? Do you know which one it was?
Yeah, I think it at least partially deployed and apparently collapsed on impact.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, a couple of years ago, I was in San Diego, California, and it happened. A commercial airliner landed, and the front landing gear just wouldn't deploy, and it landed nose first. And that's always a very dicey situation, because when that front scrapes on the runway, the sparks fly. But yeah, that was.
Did you see that airplane by chance, or did they already get it off the runway?
I looked around. I didn't see it.
Okay.
They've, I guess AAA came and towed it off to the garage, you know. But
AAA.
No, I could have easily been on that plane, actually.
I know. Delta Airlines yesterday. Nobody was hurt, right? Yeah.
Not that I'm aware of. 96 passengers. I have posted the link to a New York Post article about this. So when you visit our Today's Issues Facebook page, you'll see the plane landing, like, you know, laying nose down on the runway with a fireman standing next to it. And then there are pictures of people bracing for impact.
Yeah. And now this is, thank God nobody was hurt or injured. And, you know, really. But so it sounds like to me the plane landed and this was completely unexpected. Mm. Okay, because if you know the plane's front wheels are not going to deploy, and I'm a passenger, I don't want to know.
Yeah, I know. That is my least favorite part of flying.
Would you want to know? I don't know. Would you want the pilot to come on and say, "Hey, ladies and gentlemen, guess what? We can't get the front tires to go down, and so we're going to land anyway." And we'll talk to you in a few minutes.
I would appreciate him saying something.
Oh, you would? Okay.
A little bit, because that's my
brace
favorite.
Yourself.
That's my least favorite part of flying. I'm not. I don't care about being thousands of feet up in the air and whatever, you know.
Right.
But it's like, okay, dude, we made it this far. You better stick this. I've always thought that.
Right.
And stories like this make me think I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
I got to tell you guys something. This happened to me like a month ago, and I mean I've done a ton of flying in the course of preaching. And traveling, and you know, I've flown hundreds of times, and I'm still not wild about it. But we were flying to Orange County, California. This is right after NRB, and I'm going Charlotte to California, which is, you know, 4.5 hour flight. So we're up in the air, and the pilot comes on. He goes, "Folks, I don't want anybody to be concerned." Well, that right there, you know, 96 people, now we're concerned.
Right, right.
He said, "We've got to reboot the system." And he said, "It's going to go dark for a minute. It's going to get quiet. Don't worry. But I've got to reboot, like, the plane." Now, you know, I think this is probably going to be fine, but I was praying, and it goes, everything goes down, and we're just coasting. And then
even the engines?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they like – it was a reboot.
I'm closer to Jesus. It's those moments.
And, now everything just starts coming back on, and it came back up. But, yeah, we did an in-flight reboot. And let me tell you, it was quiet. You could hear a pin drop. And I bet – even non-religious people were praying on that flight.
Oh, wow. Well, that's the case. You got to tell the passengers what's about to happen. Otherwise, everybody freaks out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It'd have to be freaking out anyway, probably, with that reboot.
So I love preaching engagements that I can drive to.
Right, right. I hear you.
That is why John Madden always took a bus. He did not like flying.
Yeah. I kind of got a 10-hour rule, maybe.
Yeah, I hear
you. Don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
If I can drive 10 hours. And
If
I can do that, then I'm going to drive it nowadays.
Because, you know, the Bible says, "Lo, I am with you."
Lo, I am with
Doesn't
you
say hi.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues. A lot to discuss today. Chris, big news out of the Supreme Court?
Yes. Two big opinions here, one of them involving affirmative action. And you can read about this on our website, afn.net. The Supreme Court ruled today. They struck down affirmative action in college admissions, forcing institutions of higher education to stop using a student's race to determine eligibility. There were two cases, one against Harvard and another against the University of North Carolina, so a private and a public university here. Asian students were claiming they were being discriminated against by universities that were falling back on affirmative action to justify whether or not they might have had too many Asian students on campus. So Asian students brought these cases against the universities where, again, the Supreme Court in a 6-3 decision struck down affirmative action. Overturned something that's been around for most of my lifetime, if not the entire time here. And a lot of people are excited about this. I've got a bit of audio here from...
Excuse me just a second. So, just before we hear the audio, so what you have here, what you have had going on colleges and university campuses is a set-aside for racial minorities?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so which, i.e. affirmative action.
Right.
In terms of eligibility for entrance into a university, right?
Yes.
And what these, you said they're Asian?
Mm-hmm. Asian students.
Asian students said was, we're being denied because you're picking other people based on their race, mm-hmm. not on their
academic achievement. Academic
performance, mm-hmm. right?
Correct.
And now the Supreme Court has said, we agree you shouldn't be able to discriminate against people based on their
ethnicity.
Is that what the bottom line was?
That is correct.
6-3, so huge win for mm-hmm. fairness, right. I would say. Mm-hmm. So who are we about to hear from?
We're going to hear from Roger Severino, formerly of the Heritage Foundation, and also he once worked at the Office of Civil Rights at HHS under the Trump administration, and he likes today's ruling, clip 11.
This is fantastic news, particularly for Asian Americans, because remember, Asian Americans were the ones who were artificially capped low. They were being punished by Harvard University, who gave them the lower personality scores and said they were less likely to be kind. All these subjective buzzwords to say we have too many Asians. That's really what was going on. So the Asian Americans are the big winners here. Will Consovoy, who brought this case, God rest his soul, he didn't get to see this, but he was instrumental in bringing it to this result. And we're going to see what Harvard and UNC does in response. I fear what they're going to do is try to go under the table to hide continued discrimination on the basis of race. We'll hopefully see the numbers of Asians go up because they're the ones who are being held back most. But we want to see what Harvard does next because they've signaled that they're going to resist this as much as they can. Mm-hmm. The vision of Dr. Martin Luther King was that we're judged by the content of our character, not the color of our skin. And that is what won today.
I will say real quick that Roger is not the only one thinking that universities are going to try to do an end around here to get around this. I had an attorney with Pacific Legal Foundation, which wrote briefs in support of these Asian students about this case. That attorney with Pacific Legal told me that he thought we would see an increase in these diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts on campuses to try to get around this. So this could be another story 6 months from now.
The only problem with that was the Asian student said we're being discluded. Mm-hmm. That's a word.
So, Chris, let me ask you a question. Let's say a university internally puts in place some equity and inclusion policy. These are the standards for our community.
Yes.
But let's say it de facto it's affirmative action and putting in place quotas. Couldn't students or entities come back and say, look, that might be your personal policy, but that policy is unconstitutional, and since you get federal funding, you have to amend or eliminate your policy. Could that come down the road?
I think so, and there is actually a case in the lower court level where Pacific Legal Foundation is representing a guy he's a philosophy professor wanting to get a job at one of the colleges in the in California. And he was challenging the fact that the university wants him to put out a DEI statement before they even consider his application. In other words, you have to tell us that you're going to agree with everything before we even talk to you on the phone and consider you for this job. And that could, we're going to hear more challenges like that go up the chain here and probably even get appeals to the Supreme Court saying, based on what you did with this affirmative action case, you should rule here as well.
Look. I'm glad the Supreme Court ruled this way.
Yes.
America is always been based on achievement and quality and
merit.
And we keep score. Mm. Okay. Football games, we keep score and we have a winner and a loser. And in this situation, I don't care if Harvard is 100% Asian.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it wouldn't be, but we need to base, Alex, college acceptance into a school, Harvard or University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, or wherever it may be, should be fair for everybody.
Yeah.
And everybody knows what the standards are. Everybody know what you have to score on a ACT or SAT or whatever kind of GPA that you have. And it doesn't matter what color skin you are. I don't know what, you know what I'm saying? Now, back in before Alex, the Civil Rights Movement, when you had African Americans mm-hmm. discriminated against based on race, and that was right. wrong and immoral. But right. this is 2000, whatever it
23.
Is. Let me look at my date.
You know, isn't this ironic that the left, in artificially inserting things, ostensibly to make things fair,
right?
They make things unfair.
I know.
You know, it's like when in the final weeks of George W. Bush's presidency, where I'll never forget a press conference when he intervened to prop up some failing banks. And I generally like George W. Bush in a lot of ways, but I'll never forget, my heart sank because this was so not in keeping with conservatism. He said, there's sometimes that we can't trust the market to correct itself.
Who said that?
George W. Bush.
Oh.
In November, just before he left office in January of 2005. So I think it would have been November of the last weeks of his second term. Well, in conservative economics, you know that really the best favor the government can do the economy is to stay out of it. Well, in the case of academic admissions at universities, look, in the Democrat-led Jim Crow South, yes, there was unfair bias and exclusion. But look, we are 60 years into the era of civil rights legislation. And in artificially trying to make college admissions, quote, more fair for many people of good merit, like Asian students and any other student that gets excluded, they're making it less fair. So this, long story short, this is a big win.
Yeah.
And I just hope this Supreme Court decision in the area of academic admissions will spill over to hiring practices, too.
So big news today out of the Supreme Court. They announced 6-3 decision. They're ending affirmative action for college and university entrance qualifications. I'll just say this. Listen, think about it this way. We should have entrance qualifications, and that's the right way to say it, for college and universities in America the same way we have sports teams. We don't go, you know what, we got our basketball team here at the University of Kentucky, and we need 3 whites and 3 Asians and 4 blacks and 2 Eskimos, okay? Nobody does that. You know what you do? You go, we want the best college basketball players in America, and we don't care if they're all white, or they're all black, or they're all Asian, or they're all Eskimos.
Mm-hmm.
Give us the best players. And everybody goes, yeah, that's the right way to do it.
Right.
Huh? Yeah. So
this guy's 80% three.
If we're going to do sports teams, mm-hmm. like that, may the best person play or be eligible. Why wouldn't you do academics like that?
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense. Go ahead, Alex, what were you going to say?
Yeah, like in picking a sports team, I mean, if you've got a guy that is an 80% three-point shooter,
right,
that's the guy you want.
Right. Do you care? Do you say, you know what, we can't take you, man. You're Hispanic, and we need a Aborigine. Sorry.
And see, here's the thing. The left is racist. Let's just say it. The left, with their quotas and, you know, Caucasians and Asians are out, regardless of merit, and other ethnicities are in, regardless of competency.
Mm-hmm.
That's racist.
No, you're right. It's, quote, reverse racism.
It
absolutely
is.
So big news. This is going to – there's going to be wailing and gnashing of teeth on the left over this ruling.
Yes.
6-3.
Yeah, and that's not the only big ruling that we had today. In a unanimous ruling, guys, the Supreme Court granted a victory to former postal carrier Gerald Groff against the U.S. Postal Service. I'm reading from a press release at First Liberty. They represented Mr. Groff at the U.S. Supreme Court. First Liberty says, Groff lost his job for observing the Sunday Sabbath. The decision strengthens legal protections for employees seeking religious accommodations, such as schedule changes to observe holy days. The far-reaching decision affects employment rights at every workplace with at least 15 employees in every state in the country. I've covered this case a good bit over the last year and a half. Mr. Groff had a religious accommodation not to work on Sundays. When his postal service or his post office started making him and others work on Sundays to deliver Amazon packages, he left and went to work for another post office where they didn't do this. Well, they started doing it as well. And he says, you know what? I had a religious accommodation not to work on Sundays. He was doing other holidays. He was doing emergency fill-ins and all these things to help out the Postal Service. But the Postal Service said, no, can't do that anymore. So he lawyered up and went to the Supreme Court, where he got a ruling in his favor today.
Wow.
Yes.
So I'm surprised at that. A little bit.
Well, I am too.
But you said it was 9-0?
It was a unanimous decision here, yes. Kelly Shackelford calls it a landmark victory, not only for Gerald, but for every American. No American should be forced to choose between their faith and their job. The court's ruling today restores religious freedom to every American in the workplace. This ruling will positively help millions and millions of Americans, those who work now and their children and their grandchildren.
Alex?
Well, you know, this is like Jack Phillips. You know, there have had to be some people on the point of the spear, shall we say, but going through the rigors of a trial. But this is good. This is good. So God bless Mr. Groff there.
Mm-hmm. And, 9-0, though.
Yeah.
And let me just say, thank the Lord for Trump, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett that were appointed by Trump. That, you know, their votes are the tipping points in many of these cases with such deep constitutional implications.
I will say that we're still waiting on a couple of other big cases. Tomorrow will probably be the day they come out. We're still waiting on whether or not Biden has the executive authority to just simply forgive student loan debt. I'm using air quotes for those not watching the show.
I bet he's going to lose on
that one. And then we're waiting on the 303 creative case. This is the web designer out in Colorado who wants to make wedding websites as part of her job. But she only believes in traditional marriage, doesn't want to do wedding websites for same-sex couples. And so ADF is representing her. And I've said this for probably 6 months. We're expecting that decision any day now.
Yeah, That's two big decisions. Yeah. Now, just to remind folks, these decisions are being announced today and tomorrow. I guess today and tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But these cases were heard in January, February. And so that's why you wonder why these cases all being the verdicts on these cases all being announced at one time. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court is because they heard them all last winter and they're announcing them all in the next day or today and tomorrow. But two big victories for conservatives, for constitutionalists, quite frankly.
Amen. Amen.
For fairness. 9-0. Supreme Court said you can't fire a man for not working on Sunday for the Postal Service because he had an accommodation. Sounded like to me the Postal Service knew this before they hired him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they hired him. And then they changed the schedule on.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I thought they were going to say, well, you know, you knew that it could change any day, but
yeah, but it meant, so you have to make accommodation for people if they again. I would suspect they knew this in advance, and then they changed the rules on him, right?
Yes, okay. And I've shared links to this from First Liberty as well.
But for 9-0 for even 9-0 to say, coffee's black.
Hmm.
Huh? For the Supreme Court is pretty amazing.
That'd be rare. Unanimity is a rare thing.
Right. All right. We will return momentarily with more of today's issues on American Family Radio. Do we have any guests, or is it just Alex and me and Chris? Okay. Well, we'll continue to dispense wisdom, ladies and gentlemen. And maybe we got even more good news. Who
yes.
knows? We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on American Family Radio.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
welcome back, everybody, to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Chris and Alex. Alex in North Carolina. We're in Tupelo, MS. And we appreciate you listening wherever you may be joining us from across the country. Fred's out, Ed's out, and Ray, they're all three doing stuff. So I think Ed'll be back tomorrow for Trivia Friday. Is that right, Brent?
Yes, sir. He'll be back tomorrow.
Okay. JJ here?
JJ's here. It's the normal guys.
The normal or the abnormal.
Abnormal, normal. Yeah.
However you look at it.
That's right. Right. It's all in perspective.
Anyway, good news. We reported on the first half hour. The Supreme Court said 9-0. But they say, just synopsize, 9-0 what?
Unanimous decision in favor of the religious freedom of a postal carrier who didn't want to work on Sundays and actually had that permission, but they took it away from him, so he went to the Supreme Court over this.
And they said 9-0. So liberals and conservatives said, can't fire him.
Mm-hmm.
If you agreed, told you this, but this, again, I'm stating what I think of the facts here. The Postal Service knew he wouldn't work on Sundays. Mm-hmm. They hired him, and then later they said, no, he got to work on Sundays, and then they fired him. And he went to court and won 9-0. And then the other case, 6-3, that the Supreme Court said that colleges and universities mm-hmm. must hire on, cannot discriminate against people based on their ethnicity.
Yeah. It had gotten so bad. I shared this like a minute ago. It had gotten so bad for Asian students that were applying at Harvard. One of the attorneys I spoke to about this case several months ago, it had gotten so bad for them that many Asian students were being advised by people trying to help them with their essays and whatnot, their applications. They were being told, hey, don't say that you want to go into medicine. Don't say that you want to major in math or science because there's too many people trying to get in there.
That just seems so anti-American, Alex, and also you're not wanting to have the best result by having the best people in your school academically. I don't understand. Yeah. I do and I don't. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm reading a thing about here. There's an article that is already theorizing how California is going to react because, you know, California with USC and, of course, Berkeley, which – I've had friends that lived out there, and they call it Berserkly, you know, that is just hyper liberal and woke. And someone says this is about how the University of California is reacting. It says despite extensive efforts, UC struggles to enroll a student body that is sufficiently racially diverse, and it goes on and on about how their presupposition about applicants is diversity. And, you know, think about that. Why is that necessarily something we should seek for? Because, again, as you said in the previous segment, you know, America is about merit, capability, hard work, personal achievement. Now, if that happens to result in a student body that's evenly diverse, well, that's fine. But, you know, I think about, and I don't mean to generalize, but generally, Asian families, and I know I've had a lot of students that I've taught that came from Korean and Japanese families, and let me just say, they have a work ethic mm-hmm. that will blow your mind. And I've taught philosophy, apologetics, biblical worldview, Bible. Looking back, the students, and I'm thinking about a woman that graduated in a class I taught a year ago. All of my Korean and Japanese students are 4.0. That's just like, and I asked this lady one time, I said, you know, you're 4.0. And she kind of laughed and she said, because I don't want my parents to disown me. In other words, achievement is valued very highly in those communities. Well, why would we discourage that?
And what kind of outcome are you looking for? If you want to choose college and university students based on, what does Abe call it,
melanin? Yeah.
Melanin? How much melanin is in
how much
skin.
Melanin they have. Yeah. That's what Abe says. In other words, think about it. It's ridiculous. Do you want to, when you go, if you're gonna need a heart surgeon, do you care what color they are, or do you care that they were the top in their class?
Right.
Hey guys, let me invoke a story from a week and a half ago. Very tragic, but Stockton Rush was a submarine builder, and he wanted all of his submarine builders to be diverse. And where did it get him? He and four other souls dead at the bottom of the ocean. You see what I'm saying?
I remember reading his comments about he didn't want any more,
he said
50-year-old white men or something like that, right?
And you know, dozens of engineers pled with him, you know,
Right. You're talking about the CEO of the
Ocean Gate
of the submersible that had the tragedy in the lives last week. That's what you're talking about, right?
In his workforce, his criteria was not competency, but diversity.
I got you.
And in the vessel that he invited people to get on, it wasn't about structural integrity and safety. It was about diversity. Look, their presupposition about diversity got them all killed.
Yep. And when you get on an airplane, you don't check in the cabin and go, hey, we got some diversity up here. Good. That's what I care about. I'll have a nice. No, you get on the airplane and you're trusting the airline, Delta, American, United, whoever has hired highly competent professional people, male or female, who can fly a plane from one destination to another one and not risk the lives of people. That's all you care about. Even the most liberal person wouldn't say, Alex, if you ask them truthfully, would say, okay, you want to get on a plane with the most highly competent pilots you can have, or do you want to make sure we got some sort of racial or ethnic diversity in the cockpit, even if it means suffering quality?
I don't want a quota. I want safety.
So
I think it, for me, it's I've had a hard time getting my head wrapped around. I forget which carrier it is. It's one of the bigger ones here in the U.S. But several years ago, one of them said, hey, by 2030 something, we want to have more black and female pilots.
Who said this?
One of the big carriers.
Airlines?
A few years ago. I forget which one. I tried to Google it, and I can't find the exact one. But here's why I find it interesting. What if a black person or a female doesn't want to be a pilot?
I think we need to force them to.
Ram them into that particular
profession. We need forced pilots in this country. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Well, you know, I think I was American Airlines or Southwest or somebody like that. Again, it should be like sports teams. You find the best three-pointer.
Yeah.
Nobody in the stands goes, you know, it really matters to me that he's Hispanic and not Asian. That hurts my feelings. I'm not going to the games anymore. You know what?
Yeah.
Everybody in the stands goes, he is a great three-point shooter. I don't care what color he is. Okay?
So, anyway,
as you said. All right, let's move on. You're listening to Today's Issues. Hey, you can watch this show on Facebook. If you want to, Facebook Live, just type in Today's Issues, and we also post the stories that we talk about on our Today's Issues Facebook page. And then we have our own live video streaming service with a lot of good stuff there. Check it out, streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. We carry most of our AFR lineup throughout the day on that video service, streaming.afa.net. Next story, Chris.
Well, we've spent many a show.
Many a show.
We've spent many shows talking about the Hunter Biden situation and the Biden family making a lot of money off Hunter's business dealings while
killing it.
The big guy was vice president. One of the people that's been in the news a lot for several days now has been this IRS whistleblower by the name of Gary Shapley or Shapley. He was actually on Bret Baier talking about this very thing. And according to Mr. Shapley, they weren't even allowed to ask questions about Hunter and the Biden family's business dealings. Don't take my word for it. Listen to what Gary says here in clip two.
We weren't allowed to ask questions about Dad. We weren't allowed to ask about the big guy. We weren't allowed to include certain names and document requests and search warrants. So there were definitely hindrances that I've never seen before in my 14 years concerning this investigation that didn't allow us to follow through an investigation of any other individual to include President Biden.
Okay, so the fellow we just heard from is a whistleblower.
Yes.
By the name of what?
Gary Shapley or Shapley.
So he's just out in public. There's no hiding his face or disguising his voice. He's just going on national television telling it like it is, right?
Steve had a clip of him on CBS yesterday. So he's making the rounds.
And there are other whistleblowers. Mm. Are they some of them known or anonymous? Or
I don't know if everybody is out in public, but Gary obviously isn't concerned.
Well, whistleblowers in the FBI and whistleblowers in the IRS. What he's saying right there is he's saying I was blocked or our team was blocked from investigating Hunter Biden by my bosses because they wanted to protect the president or the presidential candidate?
Both of them.
Okay. Was he a candidate when this was going on?
Yeah.
I'm talking about Biden. Do we know when this... Well, the FBI's had the laptop for 5 years or something.
Right. And then I think it's two things here. It's when Biden was vice president, but a lot of this stuff has come into public, has come to be known since he became president.
But this gentleman here was an IRS agent.
Yes.
And he was saying he's never seen anything like it. He was blocked from doing investigatory work by his bosses because they were wanting to protect the Biden family. That's the accusation, right?
Yes, and he went on to say it's not right. Everybody should be given the same treatments. I took an oath to do this kind of stuff, and I'm having to violate it.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time in history this kind of thing is going on. But wow, what do you think will happen with this?
Well, I hope true justice will prevail. You remember George Orwell in Animal Farm said, you know, all the animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. You know, that's how it is when we have this multi-tiered justice system. And look, we know the Clintons have committed crimes, and somehow the arm of the law just is never long enough to reach them. And Lord knows, our president, I wish him no ill. I pray for him. In fact, I pray pretty fervently for our president. But he's broken the law. He's been involved in double dealing, just like Nancy Pelosi and so many of those in...
Let me just say this, Alex. I'm not trying to correct you. Yeah. I'm just saying I don't want to get a letter from the White House counsel saying we just said... So I just say this.
Right. It appears, allegedly...
And according to this gentleman, we just quoted that there's been some law breaking going on.
And it seems like in the depositions, and I don't mean to say more than the facts would say, so I'm only speaking for myself. And if I've spoken out of school, I retract. It just, whenever somebody's giving a deposition and there's a bit of a gag order on them, that really raises red flags. And that's not how our justice system is designed to operate.
Yeah. All right, next topic.
Real quick, this is the same Joe Biden that wants to expand the number of IRS agents to go out there and make sure people aren't cheating the government of Texas, that he wants all of us to pay, when according to James Comer and other people, they've made millions of dollars based on Joe Biden. I question whether or not that money has been paid into the federal government.
Look, you know, it's well known, you know, Hunter Biden was, I said, killing it. I mean, millions and millions of dollars made in Ukraine, made in China. He's flying around the world with his dad while he's VP, having business meetings. There's his business associates, I'm talking about Hunter Biden's, were visiting the White House while his dad was VP, like the records show, like 20 times. I'm not making this up. This was in the news.
Oh yeah,
this was documented. So all the and then you have these whistleblowers. You have the former business partners of Hunter Biden saying, "Yeah, his dad was involved." all this begs for a special counsel, okay? I'm tired of special counsels like everybody else. I'm talking about in the, like Robert Mueller did with Trump on the Russia. Mm. And then you had, so special counsels like Jack Smith, for example. But, and this is just begging for a special counsel to be appointed by, here's your problem. It's the fox guarding the hen house, because the person that would have to appoint the special counsel to investigate Biden and the Biden family would be none other than Merrick Garland, who is Attorney General, a cabinet position for President Biden's. And so that's just not going to happen, I don't think. This will have to be either Biden will have to be the investigative power of the Congress is significant.
Right.
And so that's why you hear oftentimes from James Comer, not Comey.
Comer, yeah.
Comer.
Different James.
The Republican, and then Jim Jordan's in the news all the time because they're investigating a lot of these scandals that involve Democrats that otherwise wouldn't have been investigated had the Republicans not won the House of Representatives, albeit in a narrow margin last fall. But we'll see where this goes. Even if there's not a special counsel appointed, this is giving a big, big, big black eye to the Biden family. And I don't think he's going to be the nominee for multiple reasons for the Democrats. Jenna Ellis spoke to this too. And this is obviously just speculation, but Alex is growing. Speculation that Biden will be out, Harris will be out, and Newsom will be in as the Democrat nominee for president. A lot of it has to do with obviously the age and the obvious mental decline of Mr. Biden, but also the scandals that are developing.
Before we leave, Gary Shapley, the whistleblower, have you all on today's issues? Talked about these quotes that have come out about Hunter Biden's dialogue with a Chinese businessman, Henry Zhao.
No, we haven't.
He talked about how his dad was in the room with him?
Yeah. Let me read this because, this is, it's always unseemly when somebody says, do you know who I am? That kind of thing.
Right.
Okay. This is Hunter Biden, quote, I'm sitting here with my father, and we would like to understand why the commitment made has not been fulfilled. This is about the transfer of some funds, some money. I'm very concerned that the chairman has either changed his mind or broken our deal without telling me and is unaware of the promises and assurances that have been made that have not been kept. Now, this is incredibly incriminating. Hunter Biden, quote, he said he has, quote, the ability to leverage the man sitting next to me and every person he knows to forever hold a grudge that you will regret if Zhao does not comply and transfer this money. Now, quote, the man sitting next to me, that was Hunter's father, Vice President Joe Biden. And I will leverage him and every man he knows to forever, this is verbatim, forever hold a grudge you will regret. That's like mafia language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is not appropriate on any level.
Yeah, the Democrats and the liberal media are having a hard time ignoring that and spinning that. Now they're trying to, but that's pretty damning. It's forced Joe Biden to say, "Are you the guy? Were you sitting there with Hunter Biden, or was he on drugs, making this stuff up on the phone, or was he just flat lying?" And the whole thing. Then Biden goes, "Hey, I never talked to my son about his business deals." It's foreign business deals. Nobody on planet Earth believes that.
No.
Anyway, all right, you're listening to Today's Issues. Next story.
Well, one of the things Biden is talking up is what he's now calling Bidenomics. And he says he didn't come up with this term. Wall Street Journal and some other news outlets did in their coverage of his economic agenda.
Yeah.
But the White House has embraced what is being referred to as Bidenomics. And yesterday, speaking to voters in Chicago, Biden talked up Bidenomics and said everything's going great. Clip 6.
I'm not here to declare victory on the economy. I'm here to say we have a plan that's turning things around incredibly quickly. but we have more work to do. Bringing down inflation remains one of my top priorities. Today, inflation is less than half of what it was a year ago. And that inflation caused by Russia and by the war in Ukraine and by what's going on. But we knew we had to do more. I'm determined to keep fighting for universal pre-K and free community college. We're also fighting to make child care more affordable, because we know one benefit is that it opens up significant opportunities for parents to be able to go back and join the workforce. Construction of manufacturing facilities here on U.S. soil grew only 2% on my predecessor's watch. In 4 years, 2%. My watch has grown nearly 100% in 2 years.
He's an economic genius.
Yeah.
Huh? Undeniable.
Huh? Where do I mail my checkbook in?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I will say we do have some reaction to this.
Do we?
Yes, we do. We have Illinois college student Perry Zhao saying
is
things.
Is Perry back commenting again?
He is, yeah. Me and Perry go way back.
He's everywhere. He said what now?
Perry says things are not going well in the Biden economy for him. Clip 7.
Not particularly, unfortunately. And as a college student and an intern living and working in Chicago out of all places, I can't even afford Bidenomics even if I were to try to buy it. And that's because gas prices are still very high. I went to the gas station yesterday, and my bill cost me nearly my entire day worth of working. And I think that's just ridiculous.
The average cost of gas for a gallon of regular today in Cook County, Illinois, where Chicago is, $4.33.
Yeah. Well, that's because the more risk you have of carjacking, the more the gas prices goes up.
Yeah.
Depending on what part of town you're in.
Yeah.
But anyways, what's $4? What's the national average?
The national average today for a gallon of regular is $3.54, which is not as bad as it was this time last year, $4.86. But it's still a problem. Diesel customers, God bless you.
Yeah.
Because you're still paying a lot.
Yeah. Normally, I would say presidents don't have any control over the price of gas.
But his policies do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I would say whether they're Republican or Democrat, I don't think presidents have much control over the price of gas. Then now they're quick to credit when gas price is low. I did that. Mm-hmm. Gas prices go up. I did not do that.
Did you notice he blamed Putin there in the war in Ukraine again?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I will say this, though, as a caveat to that, and I've been waiting to use the word caveat the whole show, and I finally get to.
I like those little caveat
as opposed
exit
to caviar,
yeah.
Which you have regularly at your house, I'm sure.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And Amory.
We're rolling.
So the President Biden's energy policies of being at war with the fossil fuel industry in America does cause those prices to go up, because he shuts down a lot of the exploratory and the drilling, and he also shuts down production in many cases with refineries and with his rules and regulations. As we all know, the far left believes that we're all going to die from global warming caused by our SUVs. Mm-hmm. That's what they believe, and that's why they try to punish the oil and gas industry. Thus, prices go up. That's what I think is the effect of a policy on by the Democrats and Biden on. That's how I could say prices go up based on them being in office. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But still, you know, a lot of people were saying prices for gas were going to go up to $6-$7 a gallon and stay there. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that
mm-hmm.
didn't turn out to be true. The American oil and gas industry has a way of, recovering mm-hmm. from these big hits.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, keep in mind too, anytime somebody talks about how bad things are, they'll truck out the, we heard the lady from the White House say as much this week, well, you know, the infrastructure plan has done great things and we're paving roads and doing, that doesn't mean a hill of beans to a single mama out there trying to make ends meet, feed her kid, put clothes on his back, all that stuff. They don't want to hear that.
Moms put clothes on their back? On his back?
Yeah.
On their kids' back.
Yeah. Well, and we're also paying for the president's wardrobe.
I didn't want you to get into that transgender stuff in your analogy there.
No.
Mom's putting...
Talking about inflation, and, you know, Biden tries to continually blame the war in the Ukraine. But there's a story that came out, it hit the wire service about 10 or 11 hours ago. Biden regulations have cost Americans almost $10,000 per household. And, you know, all of these regulations, and gas, let me say this. The only problem with the petroleum industry is that the left continues to fight against it. Honestly, there's plenty of oil in the ground. We have the ability to be energy independent as a nation. And it's these leftist regulations that are causing us to have less money every month.
And I don't believe in man-made global warming. If you do, raise your hand. Nobody's raising their hand in here.
I've heard the same.
This is what we like right here.
About it, my entire life.
We like groupthink right here. So man-made global warming is bogus.
Yeah.
Planet may be warming, but it's only natural.
Yes.
That's all right.
Human activity did not cause it.
Right. We'll be back momentarily. Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
For your invaluable and valuable
I'm going to go have some caveats.
We'll be back in a minute.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.